This is Infection, the survival podcast, recorded live on Tuesday, February 28th, 2017, episode 111. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Infection, the survival podcast. Infection is your source for the latest information on survival video games. We bring you the latest news, reviews, updates, and more each and every week. My name is Nick Craig, at Nicholas M. Craig is my Twitter. InfectionPodcast.com is our website. Joining me, my partner in crime, Brian Aldrich. Hey, Brian.
Hello, and if you want to find me at Boise Computer on Twitter, or you're more than welcome to go to my blog, biteoftech.com. We're getting really good numbers on our Discord. I mean, 40-something people most times now. So yeah. If you're looking for a good group of people that have probably every normal game and a lot of abnormal games, you could come into there. So if you go to infectionpodcast.com on the right-hand side, click join under Discord and it'll connect you right in. So, and we've been getting people that play Ark, people that play Rust. There's just a lot of different games that are in there. And so if you're looking for some new games, usually we get people that get the games there the day they're released. And so you can have a group of people instantly to play with. So also we have if you're looking for our group for Steam, you can go on there and get notifications of the show right before our episodes start, or when our game of the week starts on Friday nights, you'll get a notification that pops up. So twice a week, you'll get a notification. So I encourage you to do that. If you're listening on the podcast and you're not able to catch us live, that at least if you're home or maybe we're doing a Monday show or something's different, you'll get a notification each time.
Yes. So, yeah. Yes, cool stuff. Brian, could you try restarting your video there? Your audio and video seem to be out of sync for some reason.
You just want me to recall you? I see it on Skype. So I'll just
let's
recall
you. Let's give that a try. We had a pretty good week this week, and we played a number of different games throughout the week. Playing for a game that we have talked about playing, and I've actually, not being the hypocrite that I typically am, actually got myself to play some H1Z1 this week.
Yes.
I think I conned Brian into playing some as well. So we had that opportunity this week. We also played some Battlegrounds, Brian.
Yes.
And this is a much anticipated game. This is PlayerUnknown's Battleground. PlayerUnknown developed.
So it's pretty much the whole Battle Royale thing that started out as a mod. H1Z1 bought rights to it for King of the Kill. And now this is him actually creating it because he created the mod that made it popular originally. Now he's creating an actual game that is based on that whole concept.
Yep. Started off as the Arma 2 mod, and now is in, H1Z1 had it implemented, that was in place, and now he is deciding, due to its popularity, justifiably, we need to be making
plus when you have
game. Yeah.
Like Daybreak, I'm sure they didn't keep it to the expectations of what he was thinking they were going to do. Daybreak is going to be what fits in their engine and what they think is going to make the most money.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure that he wants to make money, but, this is probably a lot closer to his vision of what he envisions, Battlegrounds or, this type of a game being.
And the interesting thing with H1Z1, at least, and I'm not privy to any details. I have no inside knowledge and neither does Brian, but I would imagine the creation or the licensing of Battle Royale, which is now King of the Kill, was probably a one-time payment.
Paid him one time, and
it's most likely not.
There's no ongoing payment.
Exactly.
I'm sure they wouldn't
do that. So that was a one-time. And again, I don't know any. I don't have any details. I'm just speculating on what something like that would typically be.
Yeah.
So for him making this game, for him and his team makes perfect sense. You take a successful mod from Arma, take a successful game mode from H1Z1, and we'll show you the numbers we showed you last week. 40,000 people playing King of the Kill at you know, given times. That's successful. It seems like kind of a no-brainer to me. So this was the first beta in probably a month and a half, 2 months. Actually, this is probably the first beta this year. No? Was there one in early 2017 or was it in December?
No, I think they had it. I think they had it about a month ago.
Okay, so a month ago. Very broken. Wasn't really playable.
It was playable. The character movement was very sluggish. The UI was just horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it made it very difficult to... I played it very little first beta.
I played maybe two, three games. It was very hard to play, very hard to get into. There was a lot of
issues. And I got frustrated with it. I feel like I'm fighting against the game. And then this time I felt it was much, much better.
Yes.
This time, first of all, I moved my DPI all the way to the top setting so that it actually felt as responsive as possible. And that was about right for this game. Usually I'll have it one down from the top just because I feel like the game just moves too fast. This one there, because of the kind of the slower movement of the game, I moved my DPI all the way to the top and it felt perfect. So I don't know if they need to maybe make it feel a little bit more responsive so that it's on par with other games, or if they expect people just to do that. You know, you have to have a custom mouse to be able to make it so where you actually feel like you're going fast from left to right. Because otherwise, at my normal setting, it just felt like it's a slow, like takes too much time to swing your gun around and to move.
Yeah. I didn't experience that.
Are you running it on ultra? I mean, were you running on all the top settings? I wonder if it's my settings. The thing is, I don't know all the... I put everything on ultra just to see how good it could look.
Okay.
So that may be why if I see a little bit more of a slow response.
I ran it on some more modest settings. I ran it on whatever the hell the default settings are. I'm not one of these crazy
graphics. Probably like high.
I'm not one of these crazy graphics people. Not the people.
See, that's the thing is I want it to look as clear and as good. I want to see what it's possible.
Yeah.
What's the possible setting that you can do?
Of course. And I'm not saying you're a lunatic for saying that, but I'm not somebody like there's people. And I actually, you're one of these people. Is the first thing you do in a game is change your graphics settings, right?
Everything. I go to options is the second I open a game, I don't play the game. I go to options and see what I can do.
So the first thing I do is click play and I jump into the game. So that's interesting with that. Now, graphic wise, the game is, I mean, it's looks like I think it should. It's kind of this open world, Arma, Daisy, kind of feeling. It's pretty open world. I love the intro, how you are physically in a plane and you control. Yeah. When you want to leave, you can kind of decide where you're going to land. And we'll talk about this a little bit more later, I think, Brian, with King of the Kill. But I am so fed up with spawning in the same crappy location over and over and over again. It happened to us this weekend. I think the most we had, we spawned in the exact same spot 5 times. And it's above that water tower camp next to the gas station. It's just the same spot and there's one place to go. So everybody in that area goes there. It was refreshing for me at least to jump into Battlegrounds and say, hey, I can now decide where I want to jump off. Do I want to go into the big city and get in a quick gunfight and steal somebody's loot? Or do I want to find two or three
houses?
And I didn't
feel like there was a huge disadvantage.
No.
Because everybody's not landing at the same spot. That's kind of the downside of King of the Kill is that everybody is landing roughly at the same time, but you know, you're in the same, there's a bunch of people in the same zone, but that extra 5 seconds or something that someone will land after makes a big difference in that game. In this one, you're kind of picking and choosing, spreading across the map to where there's a little bit more of that setup time. It's not the instant, I'm landing, I have to run and grab something as quickly as possible or else I'm going to get killed immediately. Oh, these first 5 houses don't have any guns. Okay, I lost this game. It comes down to the random, you know, RNG of the game determining that I'm not going to win that game rather than anything to do with skill. And I like this, that it gives it a little bit more to the player, letting them have the actual skill.
Yeah.
And I think that that kind of figuring out, well, where's a good place to land and timing it when you jump out and then trying to get there. I didn't really run into, oh, there's two people landing at that exactly the same time. Now, I need to move.
No, I did have that. I had both of them. I would say, honestly, I would say it's maybe a 60-40, 60 being I land by myself and I'm able to get loot, but it was not uncommon for me to land and then have somebody else, maybe not at the same house I'm at, but if you land...
The next house over,
sometimes mm-hmm. there's like two or three buildings and then something across the street, somebody lands across the street.
See, but the thing is, in King of the Kill, like when you go to the warehouses, everybody lands outside because you know that there's only three places in that one location where yeah. there's weapons. And so everybody lands at the doors and it comes down to which one runs up and grabs the gun first, turns around and is able to shoot.
Yes.
That's what it comes down to. And so if you have a little bit slower computer, you don't quite get down to the ground in time, or you get a little bit farther out, spawn point, which we get the same five spawn points in a row. That to me is frustrating because it comes down to, all right, which computer happens to load in first?
Yeah, and that's still an issue with Battlegrounds. They are not prone yeah. from that issue. They are definitely seeing the issue of.
Things. But if you can kind of see, you have a little bit more time to see those people ahead of you and kind of time out, okay, I'm going to have time to then swing over to this building instead. Even if it's two buildings over, it's not all the, okay, there's only two doors you guys can go in to get your gun. It may be as I didn't see as much of, well, we haven't learned this is the place where you have to get this gun. Like, and I found that generally in a house, there's usually a gun in every single house.
I didn't really
run into where there wasn't a weapon.
I found a couple of houses that I spawned at where there was nothing actually in the video. We'll start showing here in a minute. I first spawned and there was nothing in the house besides a machete, and that's kind of what I had to use to defend myself. I'm going to switch over to this video now. So we'll talk behind this. If you want to see this video, you have to go to the website, infectionpodcast.com. It'll be in the notes here. Just kind of showing off some of the different kind of features and functionality of the game here. Let's get into what we liked and what we didn't like, Brian.
First of all, that UI is a lot better. Like that right there, that's a modern UI.
Yeah. I think the UI is pretty good. The thing that first of all I liked, and you can see it right here, is the weapon selection is mm-hmm. phenomenal. I mean, there are so many different weapons. Do you want something that shoots fast like the Uzi or the UMP? You want something more assault rifle-y, like the M16? There's a whole bunch of pistols.
And not every gun is the same as far as there's these mods that you pick up. So you saw in there, you had some sort of a sight on it. That you can pick up different kinds of reticles or scopes, different kinds of clips and grips and all kinds of things to make that more accurate. And so as you're playing, it's not, oh, I have an AR, I'm just picking up 500 rounds of AR. It comes down to, oh, I have this kind of a gun. I want to add these different components to it to make it more accurate. So there is a little more of that variation of if someone's just going and hiding the whole time and not really looking and trying to find the parts for their gun to make it more accurate or have a better, better range. There is a downside to just sitting in a house and waiting till the circle, like you can do in H1Z1. And have the exact same advantage for the most part, other than maybe body armor, you'll have the exact same advantage to somebody at the very end. This one, you're actually having some progression of building up as you play, getting, the clothes that none of them are crazy. They're not bright red. They're not tie dye. You're getting stuff that actually kind of fits into the environment. And I find here that people have the ability to kind of sneak away when they didn't have that ability in H1Z1. Like when someone's in a house, they're in the house. Here you see someone kind of go around the back of the house and they it seems like they can actually get away from you.
That's
because of the way it looks, or I don't know if it's the way it's laid out.
That's actually the next point I had here. And I have this written in between the middle of good and bad, is the ability to sneak away. In King of the Kill, very rarely do you see somebody start shooting at them and not either have them kill you or you kill them. Very rarely does somebody slither away from a gunfight in King of the Kill. In Battlegrounds, I found myself a couple of times being able to get out of gunfights by either jumping into a house or getting back into my car and driving away, and that person never caught back up with me. Just on the flip side of that, I had situations where I was like, this guy went into this house. He's got to be gonna coming out here anytime. And there must have been more than one door.
There's multiple exits to the house. That's the thing. Or they can jump off the balcony.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of options to be able to get out of a house. So if you have someone chasing you up the stairs, like, close the doors behind you and maybe you can sneak out the door, you know, the window. One thing that I noticed on this was, it just, when you're moving, like, at a distance, you're seeing somebody, it's not like they actually kind of fade in. You can track somebody from behind. Like, so let's say you're chasing somebody.
I actually have that here. If you want to talk over this, I do actually track somebody here.
So you kind of see someone in the distance. In H1Z1, the thing is you can see, like, if somebody's a distance off, you're like, oh, that's a person. Like, it's just the way the game is. Like, you can just see their little thing, and you know that there's a person there. Here, you have the ability to kind of, you see that there's things that you can hide behind. So if you see somebody running, you just can kind of work your way up, and they blend much more into the environment. And I think a lot of that's the game engine. Just how it renders characters is a lot better and a lot more realistic. And they have a lot more variation in the foliage. Like, you know, you see the different levels of grass here, and there's bushes and just the variation of the landscape. I think it works really well for this type of a game, because you can find somebody and try and kind of just keep out of their range when it's a lot harder to do. I have a hard time doing it in H1Z1, to where you just don't see somebody from super far away and be like, okay, that's a person over there.
Yeah. I was able to kill this guy from very far away. I was, holy crap. Like, how did I shoot this guy? He was just a couple little dots on my screen. I was able to kill him from a pretty far distance away, which was nice. And I also had a problem trying to find his loot, box. It looks like a wooden chest at this point in time. Yeah. I would imagine that's eventually going to be fixed. But I had some issues trying to find his box, because unlike H1Z1, there's this kind of, at least at this part, there's this grass everywhere, and then closer to it, there's a wheat field or some type of field, hay or something like that, and it made it very hard and challenging to try to find this guy's body after I killed him, which is good, right? That's not a bad thing.
Yeah. I like that things don't stand out from super far away. Like, there's a lot of variation in the distance, and it's, if you were to take a screenshot side by side of this in H1Z1, like in this type of a scene, there's a lot more natural color variation in this than there is in H1Z1 when you look at the actual landscape. With H1Z1, it's just it's the same color all the way across. And you can just see if something stands out differently, like, you instantly see it. On this, you have to be looking, because I don't think it's just because we don't know it as well yet. I think it's because it actually visually, there is more variation between things.
Yeah.
Like there would naturally be. And it's a less, it's everything is more natural together, I think. Where in H1Z1, like, vehicles and people stand out differently than other objects in the world. Where in this, like, there's like the hay bales and all those things, I think would be equal to what a player would look like in the distance, you know, as far as variation. Does that make sense? I mean, that's,
yes. Yeah, no, it does.
It's hard to explain, but I just, when you see it, like, there's just things out there, like the rock out there in the distance. It's not so,
it's not cookie cutter. Brian, you're describing cookie cutter. They build 3, 4, 5 sets of houses and they just control C, control V all over the map.
Yeah, there's a lot of more visual variation.
There's no cookie cutter here. I mean, this is all looks like, and I'm sure some of it was automated with some type of terrain tool, but it sure as hell doesn't feel like it, and it definitely doesn't look like it. I mean, the variations in the terrain for me were very big. Houses do have some similar layouts, which is
I'm
to
sure
be
that
expected.
They're working. Yeah, I'm sure they're continuing to develop. It's difficult to create 50 different houses.
Yeah.
But you know, there are a lot of variations of buildings in here as you move around to different areas of the map.
For sure. And the other thing I liked too, which you saw at the beginning of this clip, was that I was in a bombing zone, and it's not unlike King of the Kill, where it's just random for the most part. It's near the drop, but you don't know what direction the bombs are going to run. Are they going to run north, south, east? You don't know. There is actually a red zone that pops up, and if you're in that zone, and you're not inside, you will have a chance of being killed. And I was able to kill somebody because that player and I had the same mindset, is get out of that red area. And fortunately, I was able to pick up the kill there. But just looking at this, I mean, look out in the, you can see the airdrop falling in the distance over here. It's right next to that tree there. But this variation is great. The map isn't that crazy big.
No.
But there's
but
just a lot
of
stuff.
Type of the game.
But there's a lot
there's
of stuff.
There's enough variation. Like there, that vehicle is much more natural driving in the environment. Like you can imagine if that were the police car in H1Z1, it just stands out in that terrain. Like it never blends in anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, this it looks so much more natural. I think a lot of it has to do with the engine.
The shadow. I mean, look at the shadow I'm under right now with the trees. I mean, that's like that is realistic. That's realistically what kinds of shadows big trees throw. And it's just stuff like that. That's nice to see. And of course, I get killed by a group of teamers in solo, so I'm able to take one of them out, but get picked off by the other. So that's Battlegrounds. The good for me was the weapons and the weapon customization. The bad was I was having these weird kind of stalls in the game from time to time, both with and without recording. It was just, maybe this is because I have it on a hard drive. I know people that say they had it on an SSD didn't have that problem. So maybe that had something to do with it. And the interaction.
I didn't notice a huge amount of stalls.
It's weird. It would come and go. Sometimes I think it depended on the game. Like certain games, right? I'd load in and throughout the entire game, I was stuttering, you know, not the frame rate stuttering. The game would just pause. I'd have 60 frames. Yep. You know, the game would pause for 2 or 3 or 4 seconds at a time. That was a problem.
It might be congestion between you and their servers or something.
Not sure what's causing that. And then other games, I didn't have any the entire time. So, but again, this is in an early, this is a beta, I believe. Is this an alpha or beta that they're in?
I think they're calling it beta, but.
Okay.
In the thing, it says beta.
So it's early in their beta. Next week, or I should say this week, coming up Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, assuming everything goes as planned, we will have another Battlegrounds test weekend. They're doing I love how they're doing this, by the way. We always talk about games being able to put out updates and stay consistent. They are playing and having servers live Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for specific times for specific regions. The EU servers go up at a certain time, come down at a certain time. The US servers come on at a certain time, go down at a certain time. You can play on either of them, so there's no like, oh, I'm region locked.
And this coming week will be the duos, so you'll
exactly.
Have the ability to do two. Because this week was supposed to be single only. So solo games, and then upcoming we'll be having duos that we'll be able to play on this coming weekend.
Now, Brian, let me get your opinion on this, because I know you've been critical of how Daybreak's kind of workflow is in the past with updates. What are your thoughts on this idea of doing a playtest on the weekends when you have your biggest player base sitting down in front of computers and having free time to play, and then spend Monday through Thursday or even Monday through Friday patching and bug fixing your game for the next weekend? Yep. Do you think that's better, kind of doing a rolling update than
especially because
every day?
I think that people will see that progress. People will see a noticeable change that will put goals in. That's like, hey, we need to get this stuff done before, because we've seen this with H1Z1, to where everything just kind of gets put on the back burner and nothing really gets. You know, you go weeks and weeks without any progress. Here, it's like we have to get some noticeable changes to test before the weekend comes up. So they're probably putting in the most, they have a list most likely of their biggest concerns, the biggest issues, and they make sure that they get those things fixed before the next play test so they can then see if it all is working better. And so I think this is going to put them under the gun a little bit more. And I think that people will have more gratification from getting into the game and seeing, oh, hey, this works better each time. When we do the kind of the slow rolling updates of, oh, this week we fixed, you know, when you pick up, there's a 0.5 millisecond, you know, more responsive, you know, and that's the update. Like that doesn't, that's not as gratifying as when you go into the game and it feels, just feels better overall.
Yeah. And that was kind of my last point before we move on here, is that the interaction delay, specifically with doors, is, yeah, it's not the interaction delay, it's the zone of interaction between them. There appears to be something screwed up with the doors where it says you can interact, but you can't, until you're like right on top of them. So there is some issues with that.
They'll just have to tweak their settings to where,
yeah,
you know, what distance, to make sure that the distance that it says that it brings up the prompt for the interact matches the exact distance that you're actually able to interact with the door.
And the weapon pickup is a little weird too sometimes, or item pickup, I should say. If there's multiple items on the floor, it's sometimes hard
sometimes
to select
item. I think they have it to where
it's like a radius.
They're trying to make it so that you don't have to be so exact, but the problem is they've gone a little bit too wide. So sometimes you're pointing at one thing and it's actually picking up the thing next to it.
Yeah. And that's so an issue with,
let's narrow that down.
And that's an issue with backpack size, because that's a real threat. Unlike H1Z1, where you're just piling, I'll say, Brian, how much AR do you have? You've got 475 AR and your backpack isn't even halfway full. There's the other issue in here is that there's a lot of other things to be putting in your backpack. Bandages, the first aid kits, those are big items. They take up space. Plus attachments for all your different guns, ammo for all your different guns. Because let's be frank, Brian, what do you carry in King of the Kill? It's an AR and a shotgun. I don't carry, most times I do not carry a third gun.
I carry AR, AK, shotgun, and sometimes I have a revolver in my bag.
I don't even carry an AK. I just put some type of throwable. Yeah, I don't bother with it. So
here, there's so many options to where if you're picking up everything, you're gonna have a bunch of stuff that isn't usable. So you actually have to know, all right, this attachment is for my gun. Oh, this one's not for any gun that I'm planning on carrying, so I'm gonna toss this one. You actually have to do a little bit more of inventory management than you do in H1Z1 for sure.
Exactly. So overall, I'm not going to speak for Brian. I'll speak for myself, and then I'll give him a chance. I would say that Battlegrounds at this point is they're off to a great start. We have an update from them on Twitter. This came out earlier today from the it's at Pub Battlegrounds, PUBATTLEGROUNDS, PU Battlegrounds. We have tracked down and fixed an issue that caused over 10,000 crashes during the closed beta weekend. So they're able to now compile all that information from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, give it all to the engineers and say, hey, fix this, and hopefully by next Friday
they'll have it. And that's the thing, is they can look at what are the biggest issues that we're dealing with right now. Like, what's causing the most, non-satisfaction for our players, or what's causing the most crashes like this. They saw the same issue is causing 10,000 crashes. All right, well, that's going to be high on their priority list. So they'll turn around and be like, let's fix this first. This is the day after the test is done. So you know that they're taking those biggest issues and saying, all right, let's knock these out. Let's knock out as many as we can before the next test. We'll run the next test. We'll see what the next biggest issue is at that point. And then we'll do it again the next week. And I think that people are going to be happy and seeing a quick level of development and progression with this if they keep this up.
Yes. And all indications, at least from my point of view, are that they will. Full steam ahead. Full momentum, Brian, as someone would say, for Battlegrounds. I'm looking forward to hopping in again. I'm actually looking forward to playing this in duos next weekend.
Yeah, let's see. Last time, I wasn't really looking forward. I mean, I was with how it played, And I wasn't really putting any expectation just because, you know, we've been numb to the expectation of, you know, oh, it's all going to be fixed next time.
Yeah.
So I didn't enjoy playing it that first time. And I didn't really look forward to it. I just figured I'll jump in because I saw it was another one was there. And this one, I actually caught myself saying, oh, I want to play again. You know, I want to do this. I want to get a couple more games in because it felt so much better. So I think if you tried it in the first one and you found yourself really dissatisfied with how it felt, it just felt, you know, you're used to something so much smoother playing a game like this. I encourage you to try it at the next one because I think you'll find that it's a much, much better experience, much more polished. And hopefully even this next test, it'll be even better.
Yeah. And of course I want to thank our friends over at the Battlegrounds game who gave us a plethora of keys, when they did the first one. If you're in our Discord and you need a key, get in touch with either Brian or myself. We have a couple keys left, not many, no guarantees. But we've got a couple more of those left. Overall though, there is not a lot to complain about for a game that is so early in its development. As it is, they've done two public play tests and it's very playable, which is something that we can't say about some, you know, a lot of other games that are this early in their stage. It is definitely playable and I played it a lot. I wonder if my Steam will tell me how long I actually played.
It should give
seven
you
days. It'll start doing an update and kill my internet. so we'll see what happens with that. But
see, I've only played 3 hours so far, but that 3 hours was this weekend.
Yeah.
Because I think I played like 15 minutes the first time.
Should tell you what you played in the last 7 days. If Steam might be down for its maintenance.
Yeah, mine just says 3 hours. Played Sunday.
Battlegrounds, you say. PlayerUnknown's Battleground. I've played 5 hours since Sunday, and I really didn't play it the first time. So, 5 hours was a lot for... The games aren't very long. That's the other thing, too, is they move along.
So that is
the
number
quickly.
Of games.
Yes, that is a number of games. Unlike some other game, unlike King of the Kill, when the game... you could literally go in the middle of a bush and just go to the bathroom, go grab something to drink, and come back 3 or 4 or 5 minutes later and still be alive. And maybe nobody even walked across.
Okay, so here's one thing that reminds me of is that in this game, if you get behind the gas and you don't have a vehicle, it's game over for you.
Oh, you're dead.
Because I was sitting there running, and the gas moves so much faster than player, where in H1Z1, you can always catch up and then get ahead of it. If you're behind the gas in this and you're running, you know, you need a lot of med kits to keep healing to then keep running, but it's going to continue moving faster than you can.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to keep in mind is you have to keep ahead of the gas. There's not so much sitting around. If you see, like I got unlucky one time, I landed in the very east side of the map, and then the part that it was going to was on the far left side of the map, and I just could not keep up because I wasn't paying attention early on and I didn't know that it was going to be like that. And so I waited and was like, oh, I think I have enough time because I was judging by H1Z1 standards, and I just died in the gas. I couldn't keep up.
Yeah. Now, what are your thoughts real quick before we get here? And I'm showing the intro screen for everybody right here. Which I really like. There's three or four sets of planes that go through, and you can jump out whenever you want. What are your thoughts on the mini map in the right hand corner? We've been and the reason I ask specifically is because we have been very critical. Now this was for Just Survive, but we were very critical on how H1Z1 was too easy with the compass, with all this other stuff. What are your thoughts on the mini, the live real time mini map that shows both the bombing
zones?
I think
this is about right because I didn't find myself needing to sit there and look at the map a ton. With this, I knew the first time I looked at the map and I see, okay, the gas or, you know, the zone is going to be to my west. And so all I'd have to do is look at my mini map to make sure I was facing in the generally right direction. And then you can see the line once you're crossing over it on the mini map. So you don't, it helps because you're not constantly just bringing up your map to check where you're at. And I think for this kind of a game, it works out well because when you're landing there, for instance, where you're at now, you can see, oh, here's a couple of buildings just from the mini map alone, you know, to have an idea of not only where you might go, but also where other people might be landing near you.
Exactly.
So I think that the way they did it felt very natural. I didn't feel like I was fighting against it or that it was giving me a huge advantage over anyone else for any reason. Like, just felt very natural in this game.
I don't have a lot of negative stuff to say, so we'll keep up to date with Battlegrounds. Actually, maybe that's not a bad game to do for Friday, for the game of the week.
Since duos will be out.
Let's do that. So Friday night we'll do
a bunch of the groups too.
Bunch of groups of two in our Discord. You can find links to that on infectionpodcast.com. And Brian, before we go any further, I do think it is important to talk about the elephant in the room. PAX East, folks, is coming up. Brian.
9 days. So next week will be our last show before.
8 days until we will be out in Boston. We've got a lot of great interviews planned, scheduled, lined up. We're going to be talking to a whole bunch of folks and hopefully building some relationships that benefit the show in the future with interviews, so on and so forth. Still trying to raise some money. We got these sick T-shirts in, these nice embroidered T-shirts that you can see right here.
Those polos.
I'm sorry, these are polos. These polos that are in with the embroidered Infection logo. Thanks to Langon for putting that logo together for us. Got all of our camera equipment in. We are set. We are rocking and rolling. We appear to be snowstorm free, so we're ready to go. Next week will be our final show before PAX East, and also there will be a bonus audio kind of roundtable. Who knows what the hell is going to happen? We're just going to throw on an audio recorder and chat about whatever. So that'll be coming out in your podcast feed sometime after PAX as well. So really looking forward to that. And there's not really much else to say. It's here.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's coming up. It seemed like so long ago when we were planning it.
October. We bought those tickets. It has been a long time. You want to skip? Let's jump around here on the show notes. Sure. You want to talk about King of the Kill first? Because we did play a decent amount of that this week as well.
So we played for Game of the Week. So we've had two H1Z1 Game of the Weeks in a row,
back
right?
Back to back.
We had Just Survive, and then we had King of the Kill.
Yeah.
And we still have some people that are playing Just Survive.
Yeah.
In other, like I know Landgun has been playing with a group of people. And so I'm still not to that point where I'm like, I want to play it. I mean, it was fun playing it with a group, but it hasn't got me pulled in yet. And King of the Kill was a lot of fun this weekend. I found myself being like, okay, I'm going to go play a couple games. And, you know, it works pretty much how it's worked for the last however many months.
Yeah.
Seems pretty consistent at this moment.
I am still unbelievably disappointed in the fact that there is no spectate mode, Brian. What happened? I mean, there is still not a spectate mode.
That just kind of went off the
list. We were told months ago that this was done. Where is it? This is saying a lot. I think we've been pretty light on King of the Kill. We haven't been too critical of it. The game has been running fine. There's a whole crap ton of people playing it. There hasn't been a whole lot of negative stuff to play. But where is the spectate camera? We were promised this in the middle of 2016. We were promised this pre-invitational.
I just don't know why they're struggling with it so much. And I've said my idea of here, at least deal with the temporary problem, you know, in a certain way. But I just don't know why they're struggling so much with it. Like, what's holding them back?
Before I answer your question.
What is it? Is it the engine? Are they admitting that the engine is not capable?
I'm not sure. But and the other thing too, PH, thanks for bringing that up. There is still no rankings for twos or fives. They still have yet to we were promised in July of 2015 that we were going to have leaderboards for twos and fives. We still don't have those. That was 2015, Brian, that we were promised that. July. I specifically remember.
When we play as a group, like our infection plays mostly in five mans.
And we kick ass. And we're good.
Very well. You know, we've won a number of times. If we had a board that showed our wins, we'd have some very impressive wins in five mans. You know, and that's the thing is I look at my solo board and it's like, God, that's not very good, but that's not where I really play. Like it was empty until this weekend. Like so whenever they reset it,
yeah,
I hadn't played. So everything that's on there at this moment is from playing this weekend.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this past week.
And it's just so unfortunate because Joe
says we only win because we're in his group.
Yeah, of course.
Joe usually dies for, never mind.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's just so unfortunate because there's so many people that are loving this game right now. If you go on Reddit, their Reddit for the most part is pretty positive. Of course, there's your typical alpha bros in there still, but there's not a whole lot of bad things to say about King of the Kill for what they've done. It's a pretty stable, it works. It's
they
fun.
Stop promising anything. Maybe that's what they've done because I haven't heard anything for a long time. I think they've just gotten to the point where they just stop promising anything.
But this is the problem I have with Spectate. It's not that it's and let me be very, very clear how I feel about this. When I say what happened to the Spectate, that is not in the same group of what happened to the base customization that they talked about in a live stream once, month three of the game. This was
this is something they said. Oh, it's
Brian. This was on the test server for weeks. This test, it was in there. There was spectate mode on the test servers.
Yeah.
What happened
and
to
that,
it?
That's it. Just you haven't heard a word about it. Like there's been no hint. And that's what I don't know is like, are they just now dropping it?
I just have to wonder.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Since they've even mentioned it, like, is it secretly like there and they're just going to release it? You know, they're not going to PAX. Like, I don't know what they're waiting for this tournament. Maybe. Well, I mean, what's the point?
So,
this tournament's all going to be local anyway. So it wouldn't be used in that unless they're revealing it there. And that's actual how it's going to be.
Yeah.
But
so
now that's a group tournament, right? That's actually five mans.
Yes. Yeah, so let's
that's a big surprise.
Yeah, so let's talk about this. Let me get this pulled up here so I can read you all of the details. But there is another H1Z1 King of the Kill tournament. Now, typically, the tournaments in the past have taken part in conjunction with TwitchCon, which is, the big... it's Twitch's PAX, essentially, where they have a whole bunch of Twitch streamers there. They do panels, so on and so forth. And for the first time ever now, they are doing their own tournament. Called H1Z1 Fight for the Crown. And they have partnered with the CW Network, which is, I believe, a U.S.-only network, at least on cable. And they're going to be having a 15 teams. It'll be a 75-person tournament, 15 teams. They're going to be producing a 6-part eSport docuseries that's going to capture the whole lead up to it, the preparation, all of that stuff, and then there will be the finale.
Are they
going
to be doing that, or is somebody else doing that?
I think that's the CW is producing the video.
I was
going to
just make sure the Daybreak wasn't in charge of making a documentary.
No, I don't think so. That's why they're partnered with.
Cringe.
Stop being so negative.
I can imagine it now.
Brian, stop. I'm trying to cover the news here, and you're ruining it. It's a five-man tournament, 75 people, 15 teams, and the prize pool is $300,000. If you want more details, you can head on over to H1Z1FightForTheCrown.com. There are some issues, I think, with this. First off, it uses the Echo, not the Echo Fox, the Twin Galaxies leaderboard. It's not your own leaderboard. It's not Daybreak's leaderboard.
That's the problem, because they don't have the five-man leaderboards in.
But
they don't. They can't track it themselves. So
hold on, these are solo leaderboards that they're tracking. So there's a lot of interesting things going on here with this tournament. I'm not clued in on all the details. But I mean, like, 7 of the 15 teams are already announced in the tournament. It just got announced this weekend.
There's a number of professional teams.
All the teams are actually already announced.
Fox, yeah. I mean, they're automatically in.
There's already 10 teams. And then all these teams are bringing 5 players. Who knows what's going on with that? But this is going to be taking place. I don't remember the date exactly. But it's not going to be live. It's not going to be on Twitch. It's going to be on TV on the CW network. The final night of the tournament. So we'll see what comes out of this.
So it's 4/20, which I'm assuming they're picking because it's a pot smoking holiday. go daybreak. But that is, yeah, so the CW 4/20/17. There is a video. Do you want
to play that? I don't think the video had anything too great in it.
Yeah, it's just their normal running around, and some of the things are in the game, some of the things are not.
It's short. So we can pull this up. I totally forgot about it. So I don't have the audio ready, but this is kind of their little 24-second promo video for their tournament. What's up? Yeah, 4/20.
That was quick.
Yeah, that was quick. 4/20 with that. I'll give you a sniper for that one. And yeah, there you go. So this is
one game, $300,000. So yeah, don't you think that that's a lot of build up for a half an hour?
I don't know. I mean,
don't you think they could stretch this out to a tournament?
Well, that's the other interesting thing I look at too, and you have to look at some of these other esports tournaments, and I know they're not the same. Games like Dota and League and Counter-Strike are not, they're not structured like King of the Kill are. Counter-Strike is multiple rounds. Dota and League are completely different games, not really comparable. So I don't want to use those as the comparisons. But $300,000, first place is going to take home $180,000, second 60, third 30, fourth 18, and fifth 12.
If they're pre-recording this, I would almost rather see them do like 5 games and have it be to where it's kind of like elimination. You know what I'm saying?
That's the thing I find interesting about this. And I would imagine this has something to do with their partnership with the CW network. Is if you look at if you look at League of Legends, Dota, Counter-Strike, the abbreviation, those are streamed on Twitch. And then ESPN 3 or 2, maybe like later on in the night, like maybe 9, 10 o'clock or something, those come on in the turn. Sometimes that was actually even live. I think 2 years ago, Dota was live on ESPN, which is pretty crazy.
And if you look in Korea, those tournaments are huge. They fill up arenas.
Yeah.
And watch people sitting in a little glass room in the middle of everything playing a video game.
But the problem with this is it's not live.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm saying, is they could do a number of games and take the highlights out.
So, but here's the thing, you know damn well they're playing in front of an audience. The winner is going to leak, and then it's over with. I don't want to watch it. If I already know who wins, who cares? I mean,
I wonder how much of this is the CW wanting to say, hey, we're getting into esports.
Well, I don't know who owns the CW. I think it's a Turner Broadcasting Company, and TBS has recently been doing a lot. They had that multi-part Counter-Strike series,
PhD,
I believe.
He shows one of, I think it's Echo Fox or whatever. That's a different group. But that, you know, that's like a tournament.
It's a Counter-Strike tournament.
An arena. Yeah. It's a Counter-Strike group. But they're filling up an arena of people just watching these guys. They can't even see the screens, right?
Yeah.
They're just watching the back of their monitors and these guys facing them.
Well, I mean, they have a big jumbotron. Okay, so Green Man is saying Turner owns them. So Turner Broadcasting owns TBS. They're doing a lot with esports they had a series. I think this kind of fits in. But it's going to be interesting to see how a not live tournament with a live audience is not going to somehow leak on the internet. And you're not going to know everything.
If anyone tweets from the audience,
I mean,
that was awesome. What are they going to, they're not going to make them all sign something that says you're not allowed to tweet.
An embargo until the date. Yeah. I mean, that's just not going to work.
You can't, until this broadcast, you can't even say, you know, that was great. I don't know. I think that this is the type of thing that should be somewhat live.
Yeah. I would like, and of course doing live TV for traditional broadcast is not as easy. And actually, it turns out Turner doesn't own them. Thanks, Green Man. It's a CBS and Warner Brothers. So that's that. I mean, thanks, Green Man. Appreciate your contribution to the show. But I don't like the idea of it not being live. Like, that's the whole point of these tournaments is that they're live and you're seeing it.
Like watching the Super Bowl. It's like the equivalent of watching the Super Bowl on DVR.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Except for this is less important to you. So you're not gonna be like, I'm not going to look at Twitter all day because, oh, I might see who won this tournament, you know, but it's the equivalent of doing that.
Well,
I don't see why. I wish they would have it to where it's even just on a slight delay. So they give themselves some time maybe to fix an issue, but put it on, you know, a half an hour delay.
Yeah, the issue I run into with this specifically is the fact that they want to say that esports is a sport, correct? Like the claim is that an esport is.
I'm sure, they'll be filing for the Olympics next.
Well, but no, but I mean, that's the whole thing is that, you know, this is just as good of a sport to watch and to interact with as football, soccer, baseball, whatever else. They don't tape delay football games. They don't tape delay baseball, basketball games. Those are live. So when you're taking this sport and it's airing, it says it's going to air at 9 p.m. on April 20th. That's not going to be live. So that's just a big problem.
They should just treat it as a documentary, like not, you know, have it say we're going to be releasing a documentary of the tournament later.
Yeah.
You know, and treat it more like that. Put more polish into it. Put in things about each of the players and treat it like a documentary. I think they would be much more successful not saying, oh, we're going to present to you now, here's the tournament. Present the players of the tournament, what goes into making the tournament. Like, make it a documentary. And put that on the CW because that's something you actually could put up on Netflix later and it would be interesting. I wouldn't want to go watch, oh, here's the tournament that was played back in, you know, 2017, 3 years from now. I have no interest in that. But the making of a tournament and all the background stuff, that stuff would interest me years later.
That's cool. I look forward to watching that more than I look forward to the tournament, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And
that's what I'd say. If they could do that more. And get away from what they've done before if they're not going live. Because the benefit of live is it feels in real time and you can see the people winning or losing in real time.
For example,
if
this was live at 5 p.m. Eastern on the 20th, I would make sure I have nothing going on so that I can sit in front of my TV and watch it. But the fact that it's at 9 p.m. and it's already a tape delay, I'll just record it and watch it whenever, or I'll just watch it on YouTube.
I'll just watch the highlights.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably going to watch the whole thing, just, you know, vested interest in it, of course. But I just think people interact very differently. Like, for example, nobody tape delays the Super Bowl because you're an idiot. If you don't watch the Super Bowl live, there's no point of watching it. That's part of watching the Super Bowl.
And if you do, it's an hour later. You know, if something came up,
exactly.
An hour later, because you're not going to totally cut yourself off from the world.
But you don't watch the Super Bowl the next day. Because that just doesn't make any sense. But with an already not live tournament, I think I don't think this will have the cable numbers that CW is looking to get because it's not live. And that's what people care about. So we'll see. We'll see what happens to it coming up. Hopefully, between now and then, maybe we could possibly talk to someone from Daybreak about this tournament. I have no idea if anybody's listening to the show from there. I'm interested in hearing about this. And I wonder now, will the H1Z1 Invitational take place again this year at TwitchCon? I would like to think so. But who knows with this other tournament. So cool stuff. Another big tournament. They're doing something right. So we'll see.
Yeah. Be interesting to find out. All right. So do we want to jump into the raffle here since we're about an hour in?
We're about an hour in and we're probably gonna have to push stories again.
I know. Sorry.
Hey.
All right. So, exclamation point giveaway. And this week, for our first one, we're going to be doing Oil Rush. And this is a game that is kind of like a tower game. It's an interesting concept. I'll put a link to it in the chat. So if you guys want to check it out, but it's mixed reviews, but it's $8 game, made in Unreal Engine. And it's a 16 missions, single player campaign, and then 15 maps for multiplayer maps. But it's kind of a strategy RTS tower defense dystopian game. It looks interesting. Like if you look at the graphics on it, it looks good. So for when it was made. So yeah, if you're into those kind of games, this is cross-platform multiplayer. So people that have this on Xbox or PlayStation, you can play against all of them. It's multiplayer, single player, and it's got Steam achievements if that's what you're into, trying to gain those things.
Yes, cool stuff. And of course, if you feel so inclined to do so, you can head on over to our website, infectionpodcast.com/PAX, PAX, and 9 days to go. If you feel so inclined to help us out, you can head over there and drop us a couple dollars. It is greatly appreciated. So that's that. And we do actually have some H1Z1 news and updates that we didn't get into. So there was a quick King of the Kill update that was pushed out on the 23rd. And in this was just some a round of server optimization. And of course, always trying to optimize the server and have the best possible performance on that. And then a small client-side update went live that includes the in-game ping indicator, which was really nice to see. So now in the upper right-hand corner of your game, under the name of the version and the server that you're on, it will show a little text. It'll show text there with your current ping. Now, I do have some issues with the way ping is working, and we can jump into that next. But that was now in there, so now you can see your game. Now you can see your ping in game. And they're also going to be moving to a new Asian data center that is going to be located in Tokyo. Their current Asian servers were underperforming, so they're going to make a move not too far off from what we're seeing with Conan, Brian, where servers were just not capable of handling the load that was necessary.
And that's a big issue. And they have all these virtualized servers, and they're trying to give them the minimal amount of resources they can. I think that they're learning that on games like this, they really need to go to probably dedicated hardware. Virtualization is great for certain things, but for gaming computers or for gaming servers, it's not a great thing. So I'm assuming that's why when they say they're going to better hardware, it's probably going to a more dedicated setup.
Yeah. Now I do have some criticisms to make here, with the ping. There is a massive issue going on again with the US East servers, where there is I don't even know what word to describe how many players there are from the Asian region on the US servers, but their pings are through the roof, and they are for some reason able to play on the US East servers with over 450 milliseconds ping with no problem. The game is not doing anything to disadvantage them. I am getting screwed.
I think it's because the game
players.
Lets them do whatever they want, and then it just gets updates from the client saying, oh, you did this? You did this about 3 seconds ago, 4 seconds ago? All right, you're fine. Which is bad because you don't see on your side when you're going up against those people, you don't see the updates of where they actually are. And that's the issue with games like this, is when they give it too much leeway, that's when you can do lag switching and you can do all these different things. They're giving them too much leeway to where, to them, everything's picking up quickly and they're able to do everything just because the server's not checking every time to make sure that that's okay.
Yeah, there is some massive issues going on when people are playing with 2, 3, 400 milliseconds ping. We were told, Brian, time and time and time again, that there were going to be implementations, ping restrictions put in place on this game. And from this video that I have right here, see if I can, oh, there we go. I can get the ping in the picture here. From this video I have right here, this is a, this person is playing on Panda TV, which is a Chinese Twitch TV. Their ping is over 220 milliseconds, and they have zero issues interacting with any objects. They are free to run around and interact with anything like somebody that has 30
milliseconds.
But that
shows you how sloppy the code is. That shows you how sloppy the net code is for H1Z1, because from experience, let's say in Unreal, for instance, if I were making the same interactions for Unreal, when you would go up to an object and say, can I pick this object up? It's not picking up and managing the object on your local computer. It is talking to the server saying, okay, the server, you have this object, can I have it? If you had a 200 millisecond to 400 millisecond ping, you would have to wait that long until the server finally came back to you and said, all right, you can pick this up. You know, this is something you're allowed to have. You don't see that at all in their stream here. So you know that they're doing it locally, checking it later to make sure that it was okay. Which is a bad way to do, because it makes it so that the game seems more responsive, but allows cheaters to get away with more. And I think that is what we see. Or it allows people to move around and be very difficult to shoot because the server is getting intermittent updates of their location while you're sitting there trying to shoot at them. And it looks like to you that they're sitting there and just jumping left and right like crazy. But just because that's when their computer is actually sending updates of here I am, here is where, you know, I'll give the server an update now of where I'm at. It's a very bad way to do it. And it's a very bad way for anti-cheat. And I think that's a big reason why we see a lot of problems with cheaters in H1Z1 is because the client can say, hey, here's what I did. You know, do you trust me?
Well, I am not, my indication here is not that this person is a cheater.
I'm not saying they're a cheater,
exactly.
This shows that cheaters can get away with so much when this thing is running at you know, this computer here is running at
228 consistent milliseconds ping. That is not that you can't. I can't compete with that. When I've got 30, 40, 50 milliseconds ping, I mean, you can see it even right here with the other person they're playing with. This other person is rubber banding. And kind of that person just ran through the wall. I mean, did you see that? This person literally just ran right through the wall upstairs. Let's see. Just watch this one more time. You can watch the person just run right through the copy machine, Brian. Where did they go? What the hell is happening?
And then we run into issues with doors not being open or being open, and one person sees the doors not open.
Look at this person is just glitching back and forth. Why is there not ping or region restrictions on this game? Because I am getting screwed by it. It's not affecting them. It's affecting us. It's affecting the U.S. players.
For us to shoot them.
I can't shoot somebody that's rubber banding through a wall. That's not possible. I can't kill them. They can kill me, though, because they can constantly track my location because I don't have 300 milliseconds ping. This is unbelievable. Daybreak is absolutely full of it when they say, oh, we're trying to implement measures for ping restrictions. That's absolute and utter BS. They're not doing anything. And I love how when I brought this up to them on episode 13 of this show, episode 13 of Infection, we had Daybreak on
that possible concept.
We had Daybreak on the show, episode 13, and I said, what are you going to do about the Asia region servers? What are you going to do about the players in that region that are playing on U.S. East servers or U.S. West servers with 300 milliseconds ping? And we heard let's give a politically correct answer because we don't want to offend anybody. It's ridiculous. Just why is that? That's not allowed, Brian. That's not allowed in any other game where you're allowed to interact with somebody like
that. How much of it is us assuming that all these you know, majority of these Asians are hacking, when how much of it is just that they're allowing them to get away with so much to where it looks like they're warping around. I mean, I've always wondered how much of me reporting hackers early on was just these people getting away with ridiculous ping times, going through walls, rubber banding everywhere, being impossible to shoot. I mean, we've run into our share of cheaters.
Yes, legitimate cheaters, proven cheaters.
There are some very obvious cheaters. But I've always wondered, like, when I see somebody who looks like they warped through a wall, how much is that them no-clipping versus just the client says, all right, oh, you were outside, now you're inside, now you're outside. Okay, that's fine. I mean, it's just frustrating. Like, there needs to be, especially if they're claiming to go competitive with this, if this is supposed to be an esport, they're running all of those in the local.
Look at this guy. He just did it again. This other player just ran out the front door and then slingshotted back to where they were before. I mean, what in God's name is this company doing? You can watch this player run through the front door.
That means that they can't use any.
Look
at
he just rubber banded right back. I mean, what are they doing? How am I supposed to shoot that person?
For competitive game, like they need, if this is going to be an esport, they need to treat every game. If they're accepting people for esports based on your scores, they need to have them be somewhat accurate. I mean, look at that. You can see their car is just like kind of rubber banding back left and right, back and forth as they're trying to drive forward.
It makes me want to put my head through the wall. Because they just have to put in a ping restriction. If you have over 150 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds ping, you will not be able to play on the server. Really freaking simple. Exactly. Just don't allow it. I mean, every game, other games do this. It's not a problem. That's why they have region. What the hell's the point of having Asia region servers when they're just playing in the US East servers and screwing me? I mean, I get it. We've got people like Joe that live over in Australia. Guess what we'll have to do? We'll all have to play on the UK servers so that we all have a somewhere 100, 150, 120 milliseconds ping. We'll all have that bad ping. But 228 milliseconds in a competitive FPS where you're needing to shoot somebody with precision? This is a joke. This is an absolute joke. It's screwing the people that live in the region. If I go and play in the Asia servers, it's going to be the exact same result but flipped. It's ridiculous. It pisses me off beyond belief because they say they're doing stuff about it, and they're not, clearly. Go on panda.tv, not a sponsor.
Yeah,
go to
panda.tv and search. They have an H1Z1 category, and I challenge you to go find one of them that are playing on the Asia servers. They even put on there, we're going to... there's one that said we're going to kill Americans.
I mean, look at this guy he's walking around with, just like fidget back and forth. Like he just walked through the wall there. I mean, this is an absolute joke. It's an absolute joke. Daybreak, get it together. Put in a ping restriction. Really freaking simple. Really simple. But
imagine how many problems would probably go away if they put in a ping restriction. The crazy things with the shotgun, all these issues that they constantly are having because of weird, client not knowing where the person is. Imagine how many of those things would smooth out if they actually held to a decent restriction.
Yeah. That would be reasonable.
What would Dr. Disrespect do with his videos if he didn't have constant, I shot this guy directly in the head with a shotgun, and he didn't die.
And they teleported across the map. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the guy teleported somewhere else. So, yeah.
What's the remedy, Brian? What are they going to do? Because we've been being fed this, clearly this line from them.
They have to rewrite a lot of things. I mean, it sounds like they wrote their code in the wrong way. It sounds like, because when you're writing code, you have to keep it in a mindset of the relevant system that we keep talking about and talking to the server. And it seems like they wrote the game in a very haphazard fashion of making a lot of stuff happen on the client because we want it to seem fast, right? We want it to seem like it's a really responsive and high performance game. But the problem is, as we saw, what happens when you get disconnected from the server, or what used to happen when you got disconnected from the server in H1Z1? You'd run around for 15 minutes before it, and the only thing that would happen is you couldn't interact with anything. But you can run around when you got disconnected. Remember on Just Survive when you get disconnected? Yeah,
you just run to the abyss.
And you just keep on. Well, no, they had it for a while where you could actually run around and do stuff, but you couldn't actually interact with anything.
Yeah.
Opening that doors. Shows you that they were not checking with the server, even if you disconnected. They weren't having the client even bother to check with the server to say, am I supposed to be here? Am I supposed to be connected? It didn't matter. Oh, the only thing they wouldn't let you do is interact with things.
Yeah. I mean,
so obviously they're not even checking.
Yeah. And I'm just on this thread on Reddit, and it's just everybody saying the exact same thing. No one will care if the Azure servers go down. They're all here in NA. Exactly. I mean, that's the point.
Notice.
No, the people in Asia aren't playing on the Asia region servers. They're screwing the people that are playing in the on the NA servers. It's just so infuriating because they said they fixed it. They said they put in some type of ping restriction. I mean, 228. This is a multiplayer game. This is a real time FPS. This isn't something where you can deal with a high ping. It just doesn't work like that. So, get it together, guys, because it just does. This will never work.
Yeah.
Under any circumstances with these pings. It's never going to work. And this should piss everybody else off just as much as it pisses me off. Because at the end of the day, you are the one that has the bad experience in game. It's the people with the higher ping that are better off. Because they're seeing your location precisely.
Yeah, they're getting
accurate information.
Accurate updates from the server of your location. But you're not getting accurate updates of their location when you're playing against them.
So you are the one getting screwed. But there's just no remedy, I guess, because I guess a ping restriction would be bad somehow. That would destroy things. That would make people have to play in the region in which they live, in which they have the best connection. For some reason,
they must have statistics of there must be a lot of people with bad ping times.
Add more servers, real simple.
Are they worried that half of their player base won't be able to play if they actually enforce ping times?
I just can't imagine somebody from China having a 230 millisecond ping to the US and somebody in the US having over 200 milliseconds ping. I just can't even see how that's possible.
The thing is they must have statistics of a huge amount of their player base having a high ping time. And so that would be one reason for them to not enforce it, because they know, oh, look at our numbers are really good right now. If they actually enforced a ping time, what if they cut out half of their player base not being able to play because of bad connections, bad computers, bad whatever. And they're just like, oh, these people get to play. You know, they want the numbers. Oh, they're going to buy more skins.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. It's just very, very
they're probably looking at numbers, but they need to look at, all right, well, let's start out at least, let's keep 75%. Let's look at the ping rate of 75% of our current players. Let's cut out that top 25% if it's a bad number. And, you know, those people are going to either have to get a real internet connection, they're going to have to play on a local server, whatever it is. You know, you have to be willing to drop people to make it a competitive game.
Yep. Yeah. CSGO would never allow that.
Yeah. But that's why people play it.
Yeah.
This one, people are playing it because they can get away with anything.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, it's a game that actually works.
Yeah. Let's do the giveaway here, and then we will jump into some Just Survive updates as well.
All right. So Amnon won again. So should we?
Yeah. Just go ahead and reroll.
Oh, sorry, I'm gonna repick because I know he's not gonna play it.
Hey, there we go, Joe. Look at that.
All right, Joe. Congratulations. Now, the next game that we're doing in the second raffle, I was Taylor picked for Joe, so we'll see if he, well, maybe we'll let him enter that one. It's his kind of a game.
Rigged again. We do have some, on a lighter note, without making your blood boil, we do have some Just Survive updates. I'm going to run through a couple of these things real quick here. We are running a little late here. But this was a pretty significant Just Survive Live update. This took place on the 21st. So this was last Tuesday. And of course, we didn't do the show. That was last Tuesday. We didn't do the show, right? Or was that the week before? No, that was the week before. This happened last Tuesday. And did we cover this already? I don't think so. New queuing adjustments. This eliminates the failed server join process some users were experiencing. The apartment slash tower stairwell stuck stutter issue has been fixed. Steam inventory, there was an issue with things not appearing with that. Wolf speeds, crash the desktop fixes.
Yeah, because this was all on the 21st. This was the test server, though. Or this was the live update.
I think it was test and then it went live. So this is the live.
So there's probably some things that we're seeing that they mentioned.
Duplicated, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the Deadwood servers, which were announced a couple weeks ago, but that's in here as well, that it was renamed. So that was a live update that happened on the 21st. And then we had a test server update that took place on the 27th. And this included server timer optimization. These optimizations will improve the performance of bases, vehicles, cooking, containers, and explosives. Additional crash to desktop fixes, navigation optimization. These optimizations will improve performance of NPCs, which has been a large focus for this, for H1Z1 and a lot of other games, is really trying to nail down on the NPC and have that be the best experience possible. The ongoing fair play slash exploit countermeasures and anti-cheat logging tools. Wolf speed reverted to the previous speed, so it was fixed on the 21st.
That's an issue.
And obviously they were either too fast or too slow, so now they have been put back to their previous speed. Punji sticks work properly for all zombies. Previously they were causing issues for certain zombies upon death. As you're I'm sure familiar with, there's a lot of different types of zombies, so some maybe were having issues with that. This is out. This is on the test server, and of course, as we always say, but we're hypocrites. Get on the test server and play, because if you don't play on the test server, then there's no way to test these patches. But we don't.
Now it seems like they're doing more realistic, like bite-sized pieces. They actually could chew.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good size patch. I mean, this would be like an arc. This is an arc update, right?
Yeah, and now they're actually doing something. This is realistic. They can accomplish these things, test them on the test server, and roll them out to live in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think that's what they weren't doing before, is they were trying to do too much, and then test server was such a big mess that they could never make it live. And finally, they've got it live now, to where if they just keep these small updates, don't do anything else until these are ready to go, you know.
Yeah, and fortunately,
don't change the test server again until this has been tested for a week.
And fortunately for this, this isn't too big of an update. So ideally, they're able. You know, ideally, this could be live next week. Around this time, or maybe even late this week.
They should try to keep that kind of a schedule.
Yeah, push a...
Because the thing is, they keep adding things to the test server.
Never gets tested.
And then you never really get a fully tested test server.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Again, this is an arc update. This is a small arc update. Some optimizations, some crash fixes, optimization, continuing to do whatever. I mean, that's what that is. It's just a typical update, which is fine, but good. Get this tested, because there are people that religiously play the test server. Let those individuals get this, play this, test it, and then push it to live by Friday or Tuesday of next week or something like that. That would be ideal. So we'll see.
All right. So do we want to jump into Conan Exiles? They have one patch this week.
Slow week for Conan. They're doing multiple a week, but.
Yeah, and we'll see. Now, this one they were focusing, so this was the 23rd.
Okay.
And they released a patch that was focused on a lot of exploit fixes. So one issue they said that is still known is that the Yellow Lotus potions sometimes have no effect. They said they're working to fix this as quickly as possible. In the meantime, they recommend do not use them. And then as far as they have a number of exploit fixes here, players can no longer use building previews to move themselves around. So somehow they were using the preview thing to actually make their character move around and like maybe get somewhere they weren't supposed to be. And I think someone said something about like a chair or something. Yeah, here we go. Players can no longer use chairs to travel great distances. So somehow they were able to get themselves to go across the map with a chair. Another exploit fix is the crouch jump boost should now be fixed. So please get in touch with us if you discover additional instances where jump boosting is possible. So trying to make it so you can't, you know, jump over the wall of a base. You know, because this was messing up their whole balance of the rating system that they were trying to do. Another fix that they did was you can no longer dismantle explosive jars that have already been exploded. So probably were dismantling them and then getting resources back. Another exploit fixes players now respawn immediately upon dying, skipping the death camera. This is a temporary measure to prevent players from retaining their gear after dying. A more complete solution will be added in the future. And then the final exploit fix is players can no longer walk through walls which have not loaded in yet. So somehow they were getting ahead of it and able to go through a wall just because they didn't realize that the wall was there yet. They did fix for certain server crashes. Bows can now fire consistently on dedicated servers. Bows will now always consume animation and ammunition. I know this is something they've been working on the last couple patches. We're trying to get the bows from the thralls working correctly and actually having the bows fire because they were firing in the wrong direction from the bow in a previous patch. So it says here NPC archers and thrall archers can now properly aim because they were pretty much having 100% miss rate when they were protecting your base. Bows should no longer shoot in crazy directions, which I just mentioned. Fix an issue where thralls would be not properly load on server restart. Knives are now efficient when harvesting hide or thick hide, and they made more monsters able to damage structures. So some can even damage the T3 level buildings. And then it says you can now loot corpses underwater, which was an issue. If you died in the water, you wouldn't be able to get your stuff back. You know, even like a river, if you were just underneath the water, you couldn't get to the get to your loot box or loot bag. They did some performance fixes, fixing server crashes, reducing some of the spam of this in the server logs. And then they did pretty much balance, a lot of balance. They did some visual improvements with like the ragdoll effect and things like that. Various tweaks to the male and female bodies. And then another thing they're working on is mods. So we actually have here, they did a post for their dev vlog number 13 discussing mods. And it has some instructions for picking mods. So you can go to the Conan Exiles workshop in Steam, get mods, and then they go through on creating your own mods. So if you'd like to create your own mods, you need to download the Unreal Engine. And then they will have a section that lets you launch the Conan Exiles dev kit. So you can try to create your own mod. So it's a full post. So you can go through there and read up. They kind of have some screenshots for instructions. But if you've ever done mod creation for Ark or similar games like that, you might already have Unreal Engine installed. But this will be a similar procedure to that.
Yeah, I really love the fact that they are so closely embracing the mod community. I mean, we've seen it work.
Well, we asked him about this. Remember, we asked him, we said, you should get to where, you're in the Unreal Launcher and all that. And he was like, yeah, we'll look into that. Well, here they are. Yeah, they've done it.
Exactly. So cool.
But yeah, that's pretty much Conan for this week. Hopefully next week we'll see, you never know what's going on if they're working on something big but hopefully we'll see another patch here because the 23rd was Thursday. So hopefully we won't get to next Thursday and have a week between patches.
Now, remember, they are also, the GDC is going on. So I would imagine that they are at GDC.
That's probably a lot of what it is.
And they will be at PAX East. So for a lot of these games, expect a couple, probably 3 to 4 weeks of slowness. While they
it's
are
kind of like
out.
The holiday when you get to these conferences, kind of like the Christmas
break. Yeah,
Christmas break.
You've got a skeleton staff at the office, and then you've got other things going on. So we'll give them a pass, but just this week, and hopefully we're able to get up with them at PAX East and get some information. So want to talk about Ark?
Yeah. So we've got. Okay, so they had a small update.
I've got before
255.
Before this, I've got an update. I've got a news story from Ark that I forgot to put in the notes.
Oh, sure.
I'm not sure if you saw this, Brian, but Studio Wildcard will be paying Ark modders $4,000 a month.
Now, is that per mod, modder, or is that overall for? That's how much they're dispersing.
As part of a newly announced. Ark-sponsored mod program, Studio Wildcard will hand select certain mod creators, and they will receive $4,000 per month to continue working on their content. Speaking with the lead designer and the community manager, they said it'll be 15 mods per month that they'll be paying out for $4,000 a mod, and they may expand that if it's successful. This game and Studio Wildcard have been so, I don't want to, the word revolutionary, I don't think is the right word to describe it here, but have been so embracive of the modding community. I mean, you look at the Primitive Plus, that's a mod.
Primitive Plus.
Somebody made that.
The center, you know, they've learned that they can get modders to do something, and if they give them a little bit of support, like, they can make incredibly good content that's almost on par with what their studio could do in-house. So why not have these guys do it? And this is kind of the, well, let's create a bunch and let's see what people like. I mean, look at Arma and all the mods that came out of that. And there are certain ones now that are spawning off in their own games. Well, these guys instead are like, well, let's keep all of those in our game. Let's not have things spawn off into other games. Like, if you make something really good, like, we'll pay you and just keep making it for Ark.
Yeah.
Spawn it off into something else.
If they had to pay somebody to make mods for the game, and they'd have to be in an office. They would be heat, that would be climate control, that would be electricity, that would be internet, that's all of the other healthcare, that's all the other things that go into having
insurance, just all the different expenses of
having an employee. These people will not be employees, they will be contractors. So they're going to be getting paid $4,000 a month. They'll have, as I hope they do, strict guidelines. Or strict deadlines, excuse me, on when things need to be done. You know, you can't just collect. I mean, that's like $200,000 a year. You can't just, you know, spend 3 years developing a mod. But strict guidelines and strict timelines on when things need to be done, and make some serious money developing a mod for the game. And guess what? That means
it's actually like, what's it, $50,000?
What?
It's like $50,000 a year.
No, it's not.
Yeah, 4K a month.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. I don't know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of weeks, not months.
But yeah, if it's 4K a week, he's set.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. It's $4,000 a month. But the cost.
But still, that's decent. I mean, that's good for sitting home.
But I mean, you think about it. This is a no. Why are more people not doing this?
Well, you have to have a game that's incredibly successful to. And very well made. I mean, imagine if they tried to do something like that. We always bring up H1Z1. But imagine if they tried. They're like, oh, we'll have other people develop. The structure, the infrastructure, like the underlying components of the game are so poorly made, they would be impossible to have a modder make anything. The hack creators seem to do a pretty good job, but they're the only ones able to make anything for that game. You look at this, though, the structure is there with the mods. They've made the game so well that modders have so much flexibility when creating things.
Yeah.
And that they were able to make something like the Primitive Plus mod.
Yeah. And I misread that. It's $4,000 per month. I calculated $4,000 per week. So according to Saul Greatman, who is an expert in a field like this, he says $48,000 a year, which that would be. With the 1099 self-employment, these people will be taking around $33,000 a year home. So,
yep. Which is not bad.
If you live by yourself, in not a major city in the United States, that is a livable income.
And I'm sure they're not making them sit down for 8 hours a day. They're probably basing it somewhat on performance.
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah.
If you're creating a really good mod and like to them, it seems like you're working, you know, to that expectation level.
This is a no brainer. I mean, they'd have to pay somebody upwards of $100,000 if they have an in studio.
Because of where their studios are.
Yeah.
First of all, the people can't afford to live where their studios are for that price.
Yeah, you can't live in LA and make $28,000 a year. That's not you're homeless.
You can live in Idaho for $33,000 a year.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah. Yep. By yourself, this is a no-brainer. This, more games, and I hope Conan specifically, they've sold a bunch of copies of that game. I saw somebody post in our Discord earlier today that they're nearing 500,000 sold copies. You know, this is a no-brainer. This is an absolute no-brainer. Why would you spend upwards of 100,000 $150,000 to pay somebody to sit in your studio, in which you have to keep lights, power, medical insurance, all that stuff up to date, when you can just, you can pay somebody $50,000-$60,000 a year and get a probably a much better product because they actually care about what they're designing, and you don't have to deal with any of that stuff. This seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know why every early access game company or every game company in general is not doing this.
It requires them to be doing their job properly. That's the problem. And Studio Wildcard has proved that they're able to keep a stable product that is very, very, very well made. They have a track record for it. And if you look at what these other games are, it's hard to find another game that is up to the level of quality that Studio Wildcard has.
Yeah. And they're another group, hopefully, that we're able to catch up with at PAX and talk about, because they're doing everything right. What can you criticize them on? There's really not a whole lot. So this is really cool. I look forward to seeing what comes out of this. We're gonna have some really cool freaking ARK mods and ARK game modes coming out and imagine the coming years with this new program. So sorry to hijack your news segment, but
going back to what I talked a little bit about last week, knowing this, do you think it's now a little more possible that they're trying to create a crazy, like just enormous game? Remember when I
said,
go into different modes. Remember what I said?
I remember, Brian. I couldn't forget.
It's like a virtual, like you go into an area and you can choose what type of an environment you want to go into. With the mod community, you could have modders that create a, you know, whatever century, you know, the Asia in the back, you know, 1,000 years ago. You could create all this stuff if you really wanted to, if you're willing to make the graphics for it. This is turning into more of an infrastructure of a game. Why couldn't they just create a thing that then the mods are really like, what program do you want to load in today for for your enjoyment, sir? And it brings up a screen. Do you want to go back to, you know, turn of the century, the Middle Ages? What do you want to go to? And modders can create all these things.
Well, and the interesting thing to note about this, and real quick before, because we are running super short on time, 15 mods a month they're going to be outsourcing. That's more than just like two game modes. 15 individual mods per month that they're going to be outsourcing. That totally lines up with your theory that they're working on some crazy stuff.
I think that's what they're doing. I think they're creating something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I guessed where they're going with this. And it's so crazy that when you first hear it, just like you did, you were like, that's no way. They would never do that. This matches up. What if they're giving them some direction on the mods?
We want
a mod that is, you know, because we've gone from prehistoric all the way up to science fiction of laser cannons.
Yeah.
You could create a mod that's anything in between, which is everything. You know what I'm saying? Like,
what about robots? They
could create, and they came up with this thing where you go through and do a tour, like pretty much what Westworld is. They have the ability to do in this game right now. Once they get those mods created,
you're excited.
And you go in there, you sit in a chair, you lean back, you know, in the game, and you pick what you want to experience today. I mean, it's just the possibilities are crazy what they could do. And imagine, there's no other game that's ever done anything like it. No, no one, not a single game has ever done that. This is one of the only companies I think that could pull it off.
No, I look forward to it.
Anyone else could.
I look forward.
And
to
this
it.
Is my, this is my, one of my predictions. And I think that I'm not a big fan of the cartoonish look that ARK has. Possibly that is something that could change, because you can make the characters look however you want. Like the map that you see in the ARK that you know, with if they're going fully modded, could be much more flexible. They could do different looks. I don't know. I just, the possibilities are there, and it'd be interesting if we talk to them at PAX. I would love, I may just ask them point blank and see if all of a sudden they're like looking at their, you know, can I say something? Can I say these things? Cause that would be really interesting to see their eyes at that moment. Yes. Did someone just totally guess what our secret plan is?
And if not, you'll look like an absolute,
or like a complete, like, no way.
You look like a rate. Yes. You look like exactly what people imagine gamers on the internet are, like, completely insane and out of your mind.
Yeah, I totally envision this. But that's the thing is, they, you know, and I've given ideas to big companies that they have taken and run with.
Yeah, I can.
And they were
that.
Good ideas. And so I think that if they're not thinking about it, and I can put this in their mind at PAX and say, really, like, I see an overarching vision for you guys to be able to make something that is so incredible that the game will just keep on growing as long as you keep the infrastructure there. Like, there's no limit to the game. There's no point where the game is done.
I agree.
Because every time you're picking, people are just buying the game, picking what experience they want. It could be so incredible if they choose to do it. And they could.
Yes.
This company could.
I love how enthused you are, but you're all in, Brian. You are all in. You're like conspiracy theory tinfoil hat into this. I love it.
I see it. And like this even confirms it. Like, I predicted that last week.
Can we get a tinfoil hat on Brian, please? Somebody, PH, thank you.
This confirms it even more that this is a very strong possibility.
But why
else would they be playing so many mods?
Well, while I don't necessarily agree with your whole overarching idea behind this, I do agree on your statement that if there was somebody to do this, Studio Wildcard is more than capable. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Mine would only, and they could even make it to where the only real difference is, instead of going to a menu and saying, here's the list of mods you can pick from, just make it seem like it's part of the experience. That's all they're having to do, is make it feel like it's part of the experience. And they've already made the thing that gives you the tour that is the equivalent to that. You know what I'm saying? Like, the work is there. It's done. All you have to do is then treat it like, all right, you know, you're going to go and experience this. And it makes the whole world then make sense.
Yeah. We'll see.
So we'll see. I'll ask them if we get an opportunity, I will ask them point blank, and we'll see if they think I'm crazy.
I'll make sure I document it so that we can ridicule Brian.
Yeah, so we're like, you were so wrong. Like, this ended up just being a silly, you know, a little list of, oh, you're going to pick which variation of a mod. It has nothing to do with what you guessed, but I think it could happen.
We'll see. So let's see. Can we just rocket through this ARK news, because we are super far.
So 2.4.96 was one little fix. They fixed the various cases where auto turrets would not properly fire, or it would improperly miss. And then they did their big one, the 2.5.5, which, if you want to, you could just show that video.
How long is it?
The video is okay. 1 minute 33 seconds.
All right, let's roll into that.
Ha ha!
That was insane. That cat looking thing that was up the tree. What the hell? That was crazy.
You got this cat that can climb up trees, and then you can jump and like land on things, pounce on things.
Midair. It grabbed a... Yeah. And by the way, if you're listening to this, head on over to our website, infectionpodcast.com. There's a link to this video because that thing, it grabbed a pterodactyl right out of the air.
Yeah. And then they have the electric eels, which is going to be my tip of the week. So I'll go a little bit more into that at the end. They have a... Let's see. They had it's not really a squid thing, but a shellfish that floats and can squirt out ink to similar to what a squid will do. And then they have, let's see, what was the last thing? And then the Microraptor, which is kind of like what they introduced in, with having something ride in your shoulder earlier. But this is something that will ride on your shoulder and you can have it knock things off, riders off of mounts and things like that. So, and then they introduced a bunch of tech tier things. So we'll have a link to the show notes if you want to check that up, but they added, a number, they were really focusing on the tech tier. They added more, explorer notes and things like that. So that's 2.5.5. That was their big patch, the February 26th. After that, on the 26th, they did a couple fixes. So 2.5.5.1, today they did another fix, an issue with like fishing rods and those cats weren't properly attaching to trees, things like that. So, and then it says added a menu to list and download monthly sponsored mods.
Okay, so their new mod system.
Yes, so they'll have a special menu item so you can find those ones that they're sponsoring.
Cool. Hopefully that process is nice and seamless. Nothing worse than a game where it's very hard to get mods installed. It totally takes you right out of it.
Yep.
All right. Let's go. We're gonna.
What bump, do we want to skip?
We'll bump Rust. Actually, we won't bump Rust. We'll just not do the video. So we do have Rust Dev Blog number 149, which isn't
the video is 8 minutes.
Yeah, so. Which would bring us to the end of the show. Isn't a crazy update here. They're doing some fixes to the shop front, which we've seen in a couple
they
of
have
the
public
past
beds,
videos.
So you can set a bed.
Yep. Public beds, which is nice.
So other people can tie themselves to it.
Heavy armor. They're working on them. Well, we saw this, the kind of pots and pans looking guy. Overall, it seemed to be
working on the vending machines.
They're working on a lot of the trader things. They've got the storefronts and the vending machines. That's and 7 Days to Die is doing kind of similar things as well. That's a big trend in some of these games. Is how do you have a PvP player base, but you also want to have some type of e-commerce. So vending machines and NPC traders are kind of the way to do that. Other than that, they've also
nothing. I mean, it's just working on animations, player
terrain
details working on. So we'll go. Yeah, we'll have a link to the video. So if you want to watch the Shadowfrax one, it's just 8 minutes, and we need to make a 3-hour show now. I think
this week.
Well, we're still trying to catch up from the other one.
Yeah. So next week will be a fast show because we won't have time to not catch up for the week after. So
how about I talk? We don't even need to do probably the forest. The forest has an update, but I'll have a link because for them, it's just like pages of fixes.
Okay. Anything that jumped out at you in it?
No, it seemed like, it was mostly just fixes.
Okay.
There wasn't really like, here's a really big new feature. They just did a lot of fixes on it. So we don't really need to cover that, but we'll have a link. There's 50.55, 0.55B and 0.55C. So they got three different ones for that. I want to talk a little bit about Horizon. So this is a game that I got for PS4 last night. It opened up. It's an open world post-apocalyptic game. Really interesting scenario where they it's future enough to where they have a bunch of like robots that are kind of like an Ark, with the dinosaurs and everything. But these are robots that you're fighting, but you're kind of in a Stone Age. It makes more sense. It's a more polished like concept of what Ark is. Because Ark, you have no idea why you're a Stone Age man, but you've got laser rifles and everything else. This is something where the world's pretty much just been destroyed. And you know, there's a lot of advanced technology that's still running, but people have gone back to this pretty much the Stone Age. And it's a beautiful game. I stayed up till 3 o'clock playing it last night. I played a little bit more today. Very well done. The thing that I've mentioned is the most of these games that I've played so far on the PS4, since I just got it, you know, in December, they feel like they're on such a track. Now this is still probably on somewhat of a track, like they're keeping you going in a general direction, but this is the first PS4 game where I feel like I can kind of run around and do what I want to do, you know, and I don't have to go and meet this person and do this one thing. And so this has been a lot. I've enjoyed this more than probably any of the other games I played so far on the PS4.
This is a game I've been eyeballing. Unfortunately, I've just got such a back catalog of other. I got a bunch of PlayStation games for Christmas that I haven't even opened yet, like Final Fantasy, yeah. The Ratchet and Clank game, and I have to finish Doom.
One has a really good story, so they're able to tell the story in a very seamless way. You don't feel like most survival games or games that are open world, they have a really hard time keeping the story going. And I have a feeling that this is going to be kind of like, what's that other game that I'm going to plan on playing? The Red Dead Redemption.
Oh yes. Red Dead Redemption.
I kind of have a feeling that this is probably the feeling that Red Dead Redemption has, but since I haven't played that yet, I can't really say, but kind of an open world, you know, putting you in a general direction, but you have freedom to go do what you want, but there's still a story that you're following pretty closely. You know, with this, it'll be interesting to see. It's got a lot of different environments. It's a very big world. So we'll keep an eye on it. I'll let you know how it goes. But it was just released last night. Really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And one thing they put on here, it says like PS4 Pro, PS4 Pro Enhanced. What's that mean?
So they do have different versions of
the I have the Slim.
So you have the Slim. So this game will not play as well for you. You may notice some frame rate drops from time to time.
Kind of a possible extra thing they're adding into there that I'm missing because of it?
Or no, you're not missing anything because of it. It's just this game. You may run into certain scenes, maybe scenes with a lot of fighting. The frame rate may dip a little bit. That's not uncommon.
See, I didn't realize when we originally ordered it that there was even a difference. So that was kind of my...
Yeah, and the Pro, I wouldn't... The Pro's not worth buying for somebody like you that casually plays it. Like even Jake, who is, you know, all into the Sony ecosystem, still has an original PlayStation 4. But the Pro is out for people that want more of you know, that want to do the VR and have that whole setup.
It's like a 4K version. So
it is. It's a higher.
I'm playing it on my.
But it can push some higher. It will run. For example, Final Fantasy is another game. It's got it. There's a couple parts in the game where it hiccups a little bit frame rate wise on the PS4 Slim or the original PS4 and plays back much better on the PS4 Pro. It's not a game changing thing. It's not worth the extra probably $200 that it is or $150 to get the next system up because it's so far and few in between. But you know, there are different versions out there, but I don't think it's the price on the. By the way, if you're in the market for a PlayStation 4 or even a console to play some exclusives, the price of the PS4 Slim, the Uncharted 4 bundle, is like $203 on Amazon. It's a steal of a deal.
It's hard to pass that up.
It's unbeatable.
So if you're looking, if you have a PS4 and you're looking for a game, the game is really good. The other one I was looking at is that there's another game that came out recently. And I was considering that one, but this one's kind of more my style, the open world post-apocalypse. So I was like, I'll do this. I'm really happy that I got it because so far it's a beautiful game. Now, this is a game that will never come to PC. The engine that it's made on is only for PS4.
Yeah.
Exclusives. So that's why you see some of these games that they only come out to PS4. And you're like, well, why don't they release it on PC? It was made for an engine that doesn't even have a version that works with PC or Xbox.
Exclusivity is good. It's good.
They tune this game to be perfect and works perfectly on the PS4.
And you'll notice, and again, I don't want to get into the whole PC versus console master race argument, but you'll notice like the game will not crash. Like You will not, your game will not go black. Like, just weird little hiccups and stuff that happen on PCs with various games. That stuff just doesn't happen on consoles. And again, I'm not getting into the PC versus console debate. But you'll just, like, Brian, I'm sure out of all of the gaming you've done on your PlayStation so far, how many issues have you had?
I haven't had any issues.
And you wouldn't be able to say that if you were playing those games with the Steam Link on your on your TV in the living room. It would be a debacle. Controller's desynced. The internet's all screwed up. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just nice. It's a nice experience.
So let me go and I'm going to do the last giveaway so we have some time.
Yeah, let's just do that and then we will move on here.
So that way we'll have until the end of the show to actually do that, but I don't want to have us rush it too much. All right, so we'll do 35 points since. All right, exclamation point giveaway, and then this one is going to be dangerous high school girls in trouble.
Wow,
so this is kind of picked up for Unicorn Joe. I figure it's a game that he would enjoy, and so I'll have a link to that.
Saul entered right away.
Yeah, Saul's all in on this game. But it's kind of a funny game.
Is it a visual novel?
Not so much a visual novel, but it's an interesting concept where, you know, girls back in the prim and proper days, you know, girls just going and misbehaving because it was such a horrible thing to do back in the 1900s or whatever.
Gotcha.
Late 1800s. So, so it's kind of a funny game. It's been out a long time. Not very many people have it, but it's a $20 game. Just for people that want to have some fun.
Alrighty. So. And with that note, we will jump into current players. We have a whole bunch of news that we unfortunately were unable to cover. We'll do our best next week to get to all of that stuff.
We're trying to catch up.
We hopefully will be caught up. We have to be caught up by next week. If not, everything gets dumped because of PAX. But we do have current players. If I can get to my right slide here. And here it is. Just a couple quick games because we are running a little short on time. H1Z1, this is Justified and King of the Kill combined. Currently playing these, 35,544. The 24-hour peak for this, 94,132. And the 7A, Brian, 105,352. Just Survive numbers? All right, nothing great here. Currently playing that, 3,478. The 24-hour peak, 6,452. And the 70 peak, 7,709. How about this, Brian? Currently playing H1Z1, King of the Kill, 32,066. Now get this. The 24-hour peak is in all... The 24-hour peak is 87,690. The 7-day peak, 97,643, is an all-time peak. Now if you remember, ARK Survival Evolved just hit that mark just a couple of weeks ago. So H1Z1 would not be surprised if this game passes 100,000 concurrent players next weekend. Pretty crazy stuff. ARK, currently playing this, 37,689. 24-hour peak, 61,222. And the 70 peak, 74,593. And Conan Exiles, numbers are fading a little bit with this. Currently playing at 15,605. The 24-hour peak, 15,512. And the 7-day peak, 21,319.
Especially 500,000 people purchased it.
Yeah, so currently Conan slacking a little bit. It was off to a rough start, but I would imagine with a massive update.
They didn't really put out any updates this week. So
and something big, too. Like when they announced, like, hey, this thing is in.
We're implementing a new area.
Yeah.
You know, all those. I think they know that is that they're going to be able to pull those players with, hey, we're releasing a new zone, which they discussed on our show.
Yes.
We're going to release a whole new biome. That's going to start bringing people in.
Exactly. So
if they can get the functionality and the smoothness of the game built out on this one, then release a new area where people have a good experience going and discovering new things. So,
yep. All right. So that's all I got for current players.
All right. So let's go and go to tip of the week. Tip of the week's where I go through and either discuss a specific game or maybe it's a general gaming tip, but this week's going to be about ARK. So this is tip of the week. All right, so in Ark, taming large sea creatures will now be much easier because of this new electro forest that they just released. So that's pretty much the electric eel that we discussed a little bit earlier. These can be a very difficult tame due to their high level of aggression. And also, when in groups, they can knock you out very quickly. But once you are able to tame one of these electric eels, they can be remotely commanded, so you can pretty much tell them to go and attack something, and they allow you to knock out very large sea creatures. So, for instance, the plesiosaur, which is one of the giant sea creatures they have, you can get a grip, a group of these going together, and send them in to attack it, and they will knock it out. So that will allow you to at least get it to where it's knocked out, and then you'll go through and do the tame. These are not a knockout tame. These ones are a passive tame, so they're very difficult to tame initially. But you know, once you get them, they're very strong. And these are probably a little bit overly strong at the moment. I'm thinking they're probably going to knock these back a little bit, because if you have a group of these protecting your water base, you can have them just put them on highly aggressive, and they'll pretty much knock out anything that comes close. So they may be a little bit OP at the moment. But this will be something interesting, because if you had a sea creature, you're like, how in the world am I supposed to get that? Maybe you want to put your base on the back of one of these sea creatures. And I know that they're kind of pushing towards a more of a water direction, trying to expand the world out into the water. So I think that these will be interesting, because they'll allow your group to more easily get those big creatures to start moving out in the water. So try them out. They're highly aggressive. They will knock out a person, so make sure you do some research on doing the proper taming of these guys, so you don't just get yourself killed constantly. But yeah, these are the electro forests, and it's pretty much an electric eel. So that is my tip of the week.
Cool stuff. Thank you very much, Brian. All right, well, let's do the giveaway, and we will wrap it up here.
All right, very good. All right, so Joe, who I thought was going to win it. Congratulations,
really?
Joe.
Did you set that up? He won both of our giveaways.
Yeah, but, well, he and Saul are the only ones that entered for us. So it was a 50-50 chance. 50-50 chance. It's pretty much tailored for Joe. The game that I think you would like.
All right. So congratulations to you, Joe, for winning both of our games tonight. Of course, a couple quick housekeeping things before we wrap it up here. 2 weeks from now, 9 days, we will be in Boston for PAX East 2017. Again, we want to thank everyone who's made that possible. So last week will be our last show, and next week will be our last show pre-PAX. So we will get to everything that we need to next week. If not, it'll have to be dropped, because after PAX we'll have a whole bunch of interviews and stuff to talk about. Periscope may be a possibility. Of course, follow us on Twitter for all the updates. I'm going to try to stream with the Twitch IRL if possible, maybe a little bit during the week while we're on the show floor. If not, maybe Periscope. So we're going to try some interesting stuff. We've got a great camera rig set up here, and we're going to try to produce some really high quality content. Of course, that's only possible by the people that were so kind enough to make that trip happen. So again, I want to thank everybody who came in for that. Other than that, Friday night we're going to be trying Battlegrounds. Hopefully it's out. If not, we'll find some backup plan. But of course, our Discord is the place to find all that information out. You can head on over to our websites, infectionpodcast.com, and of course get that
9 o'clock Eastern.
Yes, 9 o'clock Friday. Eastern, and maybe something Saturday. We did a couple of rounds of Cards Against Humanity last Saturday too. So we'll see what happens. But
if that's going really well, I'm sure people will want to continue playing,
and we'll do that too.
Continue playing Battlegrounds. Hopefully next week it's really good, and you'll have people playing all weekend.
Yep. All right. Where can people find you, Brian?
Yeah, if you want to find me at Boise Computer on Twitter, or you can go to my blog, biteoftech.com. Of course, go to our website, infectionpodcast.com. If you want to contact us, there's a contact form there, or you're more than welcome to contact at infectionpodcast.com for email. And join our Discord, join our Steam group. You'll get notifications on the Steam group. You'll get people to hang out and play games with on our Discord, a really good group of people. So thank you for supporting us, and we will see you guys next week.
Yes, thank you very much, Brian. And of course, thank you to everybody that tuned in live. If you didn't tune in live, we are every Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, twitch.tv/infectionpodcast. The most reliable survival game podcast in terms of consistency ever.
If you Google it, survival game podcast, we are the top one.
We are the source. So don't worry about that. Of course, you can check out our website, infectionpodcast.com. If you're going to PAX, get in touch with us now. We're going to try to set up a dinner and hang out with some people.
Oh, we need to set that. We need to
concrete.
We need to contact Eisenberg because he's the one coming from a distance.
Yes, we do. We need
make
to
make sure what time.
We need to do all that stuff. We will have all of the details by next week. So make sure you tune in for that. You can follow me on Twitter at Nicholas M. Craig. That's going to do it for another episode of Infection. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll see you next week.